Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Save up to $450 on a Gibson Les Paul Studio Deluxe, up to $900 on a Gibson Les Paul Trad Pro 4, or save up to 20% on other select Gibson guitars. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 59 of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, this is Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. We have a really packed, informative show today. First up, we have Sean Woodley from TSN Radio, Locked On Raptors, and Raptors HQ to help us preview the rematch of Eastern Conference semifinals, Cavs-Raptors, that takes place today on Friday. Sean joined us for about 30 minutes. We went into, you know, if the Raptors are better or worse than last year, if they're better than the Celtics, and a lot of other stuff that'll get you ready for the game. And then we were joined by Philip Rossman-Reich, who's the host of Locked On Magic and an editor at Orlando Magic Daily, to get into one of the more intriguing teams in the East as far as I'm concerned. I know they're a little funky. They had a weird offseason, but there's a lot of talent on the team, coached by Frank Vogel, and I think they might provide a sneaky test to the Cavs coming off a back-to-back in this early in the season, especially if the Cavs decide to rest players. Before we get into the show, a couple news and notes for you. So it looks like Amon Shumpert is going to be cleared to play Friday. Tyronn Lue said at Friday's practice that it looks like Shumpert is going to be able to go. That's a good thing. He'll be the backup point guard again. And it looks like Kay Felder's cleared as well, per Lue. So Cavs get both their guys back, both the guys who have had some head injuries or at least potential head injuries over the last couple days. Cavs have a full roster Friday. They play the Raptors. So now we're going to be joined by Sean Woodley, the host of Locked On Raptors, to help preview that game.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey Sean, how's it going?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. So for you listeners out there, this is another Locked On Network collaboration. It's Locked On Cavs with Locked On Raptors. These are two teams that are going to play, you know, later today on a Friday, and it's the first time these two teams have played since Eastern Conference Finals. They're obviously two of the better teams in the East, and maybe the two of the best three teams in the East, depending on what you think of some of the other teams. And, you know, they obviously, again, played in the playoffs last year. They're sort of rivals at this point. But, Sean, let's start here. Last year, Toronto, at least in my mind, were the biggest threat to the Cavs. Played them very tight in the regular season. I believe won the regular season series. Took them to six games in the Eastern Conference Finals, although that series wasn't always particularly close. In this season, with some of the roster changes and how the East has changed, is Toronto still the biggest challenge to the Cavs?
I think they are until they're not. Like Boston, I think, is clearly the third best team, and I think there's a pretty significant drop-off between, you know, Boston, Toronto, and then the rest of the East. So, you know, the only other team in the conversation, I think, is Boston. I think, you know, Boston's defense is going to be really good and very reliable. Toronto's obviously got some issues right now with Jared Sullinger being out for 2 to 3 months. And, you know, last night two rookies played a combined, you know, 35 minutes in the first game of the season. And one of them started. Like, it's tough. I'm not sure the Raptors are going to win as many games as they did last year. I think, you know, probably low 50s is probably what you're aiming for. And maybe Boston outdoes that in the regular season. I do think in a playoff series, I keep flip-flopping back and forth. I think I've picked on like three different podcasts that I think the Raptors are going to the conference finals or losing in the conference semifinals. I have not been uniform in what I'm picking. But I do think, you know, if you're looking just at the rosters, you know, at full health, Kyle Lowry is the best player in that series in a Boston-Toronto series in the second round, for example. I think it's pretty significant in terms of the margin. Yeah, Al Horford is great, but Lowry impacts everything on the Raptors. He initiates everything. He's amazing on defense, a great three-point shooter. You know, Horford needs guys to sort of set him up, although he is a great passer himself. I just think Lowry is the best player in the series. Horford's probably number two. And then I guess at the top toss-up going from there, you know, DeRozan or Isaiah Thomas or you know, even Jonas Valanciunas, considering what he looked like last night. He was just ridiculous in the first game of the year. I think just on overall talent, I'd probably go with the Raptors, but Boston's right there, and Boston scares the hell out of me, I gotta say.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess I go with the talent of Kyle Lowry to sort of, you know, I think that's a bad matchup for Isaiah Thomas. I think both teams are probably, you know, kind of doomed to kind of the fate the Raptors had last year, where maybe you get a competitive conference finals against the Cavs, but yeah, it's definitely more of a contest than it was last year, because I do think the Raptors start to finish were the second best team, despite looking kind of not great in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the Toronto-Boston series would be really, really interesting, just because I agree with you. Say Lowry is, to me, the best player in that series, especially if he can be the player he was last year. And he is at that age where you think maybe a point guard is going to dip a little bit, but he's, until he does it, I think you have to believe that he's the best player. If Sullinger is healthy and they can go with Valanciunas, Toronto probably wins that battle on the boards, I would think. Like, yeah, I think they can definitely out-rebound Boston. But then you look at Boston's wings, and you know they have Avery Bradley, they have Crowder, they have Marcus Smart. They have a lot of guys who can really guard Toronto on the wing, and that's maybe not enough to slow down them over a seven-game series. But it would make Toronto's life a lot harder, because so much of what they do is through Lowry and DeRozan. I think you're ultimately right, though, and that's sort of the interesting thing is, I don't think I as someone who watches a lot of Cavs but watches a lot of other basketball, I just don't see how either team really presents a ton of problems for the Cavs. And I look at Toronto, and I almost think last year would have been their best chance, because I think, yes, Biombo played out of his mind in that playoff series, but I think Biombo definitely helps them. I'm just not sure, you know, Norman Powell certainly could help, but I'm just not sure it's all there for them to actually push the Cavs more than they did last year.
Yeah, I'm one of the people who is, like, not that worried about losing Bismack Biombo. Obviously, not having Sullinger makes that a little bit more of an issue to sort of deal with, but... Like, Biombo, yeah, he was amazing for three of those playoff games, maybe just two, like the two in Toronto he was great for. Other than that, you know, that's sort of what the story of his regular season was. There was a lot of games where he just didn't do anything, and his offensive, you know, deficiencies were such that a lot of the time he really hampered the Raptors' offense when he was out there. You know, those bench units that featured, you know, Lowry, Corey Joseph, Terrence Ross, Patrick Patterson, and Biombo last year, I mean, they were like a plus 16.5 net rating. They were amazing, but I think most of that came from defense. Offensively, it was still a struggle having Biombo out there as like a pick and roll partner for example. So I've gotten off track here, but yeah, I think you make a good point. Biombo was, I think it was a weird blessing in a way that Valanciunas wasn't available for most of that Cavs series, because Biombo was probably a better fit in terms of how to defend the Cavs. He's a lot more rangy, obviously, and that's a big deal, especially when the Cavs are running out those super shooty lineups with Channing Frye and Kevin Love. I think Biombo was nice to have in a Cleveland series, and the Raptors aren't going to have that luxury unless a guy like Pascal Siakam or Jakob Poeltl can really develop as a defender. Both are pretty mobile, which is nice to see, but I don't think either of them are the defender Biombo is, at least not yet. It'll be tough in a playoff series for sure. I mean, who knows? It's so far away. There are injuries and things like that and trades, and who knows? But as currently constructed, I'm with you. I don't think either team really stands a chance against the Cavs in a conference finals.
Yeah, I think, and I'm still very intrigued to see how these teams play each other this year, because I think there's some interesting matchups in a Raptors-Cavs series. A healthy Kyrie Irving versus Lowry to me is really fun, because they're very different players. DeRozan versus J.R. Smith is sort of interesting, because Smith defended DeRozan decently last year, but he's going to do it this early in the season, where he didn't play very well against the Knicks on opening night. And I kind of want to see how Toronto tries to defend LeBron. Damari Carroll wasn't particularly healthy last year. Toronto struggled to defend LeBron in the playoffs, and that to me is not something I think tips the balance of the series or a game by any means, but I think it's worth watching.
Yeah, Carroll was not 100% in the playoffs last year. He really tried to gun it out, but, I mean, he wasn't even 100% coming into training camp, according to him. So you can imagine what he was like, you know, in the playoffs, just coming back and barely having any time in the regular season to ramp up. And you know what? Like, I think this is a case for a lot of teams. Even the teams that have guys that can, quote-unquote, slow down LeBron, like, it doesn't even really slow down LeBron. LeBron is still going to, you know, destroy you if he really wants to. I do think the Raptors are a little bit more equipped this year. with just having – they have a lot more wings they can throw out there. They can throw out Carroll at the four, which they did at the start of last season, and it was really effective as like a closing lineup that they used pretty frequently in the first couple weeks before he got hurt. And then maybe, you know, you get a little bit more versatility. Maybe you wouldn't see, you know, the kind of quarter that happened in, I think it was the fourth quarter of game four, when the Cavs scored on like 11 straight possessions because the Raptors just couldn't match up with anything they had. Right. I think the Raptors have some more wings that are a little bit more just sort of fluid. I mean, Carroll's the only guy that can slide down to the four, but Norm Powell is a good defender for, you know, his size. He's only 6'4", but he has like a 7-foot wingspan, so that's helpful. I mean, it sucks. You know, DeRozan is a wonderful offensive player, and I don't think he gets enough credit for, you know, last night he put up 40 points just like kind of seamlessly. I don't think he gets enough credit for that side of the ball, but on defense, he was just dreadful last year. And if that continues, there's just no chance that the Raptors can slow down LeBron. And Carroll, even when he's been healthy, even when he was healthy last year, he wasn't, you know, the defender we saw in Atlanta. And maybe it's just him slowing down. Maybe he's saving it for the playoffs. I don't know. But yeah, I don't really see a way. Patrick Patterson might be like the best option the Raptors have to throw on LeBron, which is troubling, but also yeah. indicative of, you know, how much Patterson has made strides in terms of his defense, because he has become a really versatile and switchy defender. But yeah, it'll be tough. Like, the Raptors definitely, if there's something leaning towards Boston being the team that can challenge the Cavs more, it's that they have Jay Crowder, they have Avery Bradley, they have those guys on the wing who are big and physical, who could maybe get up in LeBron's face a little bit. But even then, I just think it's sort of futile to think you're going to stop LeBron, because that's just not happening.
Yeah, if LeBron wants to have one of the nights that where he's, you know, getting close to a triple double, or if he just wants to lead a team in scoring or whatever, he usually can do it. There's Kawhi and Draymond and like a couple other guys that can kind of slow him down, but it's not particularly easy to do, and some of it really sometimes depends on how much effort he's going to play in, and mm-hmm. how much effort he actually wants to put into a game. I'll ask you this: one of the things that I think the Cavs did on opening night that I didn't expect them to do early in the season was in the finals, they ran these pick and rolls where there was LeBron and Kyrie Irving in some form, and the design is to get those mismatches where it's Lowry. So if it's against Toronto, it's Lowry against LeBron, or it's Patrick Patterson against Kyrie. Those are mismatches for the Cavs. Mm-hmm. How do you think Toronto can defend something that I think is going to be a staple of the Cavs playbook?
That's the thing. I'm not sure. I mean, they showed last year that they just couldn't do that. Like, there's that fourth quarter I keep going back to. I was in the press box for that one, and I was just like, yeah, there is no way to stop this right now. It was either you leave LeBron for an uncontested roll to the rim, or you leave J.R. Smith open for a wide open three on the weak side. It was just an absolute disaster for the Raptors, and I'm not sure. Like, with a big man like Jonas Valanciunas being sort of crucial for them, and not having Bismack Biyombo, it's their pick and roll defense is really going to struggle this season. And I mean, I think it might. There's a chance it's better, and there's a chance Valanciunas improves. But, you know, if it's what it has been before, Valanciunas is a little slow. He's very reactive in terms of his pick and roll defense. He's not, you know, he doesn't anticipate plays very well. And that's something you kind of have to do when you're going up against a pick and roll combination like LeBron and Kyrie. So I wish I had an answer for you. I don't really think there is like a concrete answer that the Raptors can throw against the Cavs. I guess that's what the regular season's for, right? It's to test out these things. And
yeah,
it's tough that the Raptors don't have a ton of versatility in their front court right now to try different things out, because Sullinger is out and because they're relying on a couple rookies. And, you know, the best pairing they can throw out is Patterson and Valanciunas. And maybe Patterson's good enough to defend in those situations. But it's a tough slog for the Raptors right now. And I'm interested to see if they've made any adjustments from the things they couldn't do in the playoffs last year. But yeah, that's a tough one for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I think that if you look at some of the other ways Toronto can press Cleveland, last year Lowry was just presented so many issues for Kyrie. I think that's one thing that I think will carry over. I thought Valanciunas has played decently against the Cavs. But some of the issues, I just don't know how Toronto, like you've kind of alluded to, like I don't know how they actually overcome them. And I wonder, I mean, you look at them this year, do you think this is a better team than they were last year?
It's hard to say, right? Because, you know,
it's early, of course.
Yeah, I really want to see how things sort of work out. I think if Sullinger's in the fold, then there are a lot of different lineups they can go to. They can go with Patterson and Sullinger. They can go with Patterson, Valanciunas. They can go Valanciunas, Sullinger if they really want to pound you on the glass. We can't really see that yet. And they also have the option of going Carroll and Valanciunas in the front court, or Carroll and Sullinger. Once Sullinger's in there, he unlocks a lot of different front court combinations that they can use to try to figure things out. But yeah, I think it might be a better team just because you're probably factoring in, you know, having Carroll for the full season. Valanciunas missed 20-something games last year, and then missed time in the playoffs after, you know, he really started to break out. I don't think we're going to see a regression from Kyle Lowry. I think that's probably still a couple years away, especially contract year and all that stuff, if that means anything.
Yeah.
I still think Lowry is going to be very much the player. I mean, he was just lights out in the preseason. It was sort of a bad game for him in the opener. He only shot 3 of 13. It was very reminiscent of, like, the Pacers series. It was bizarre, but he was still super effective. He had 8 assists. He was just really good on defense. So I think – and then you factor in some internal development, maybe from, you know, Norm Powell. He didn't play much last night. He doesn't seem to be in the early season rotation. And then if, like, Lucas Nogueira can get back from his ankle injury and just sort of be, like, a – Biombo light in the middle. Like, he's not Biombo. He's actually kind of has an inverse of a skill set as Biombo. He's a really good soft-handed pick and roll scorer who is kind of space-headed on defense. But if he can sort of make up the loss of just production at the backup center spot, I do think it's a deeper team, just because of, you know, Masai Ujiri has gone about this in an interesting way where, you know, he's really focused on cultivating young guys and having the back, you know, five roster spots essentially being, you know, super young projects. And eventually, you know, those guys are going to start coming into the fold. DeLon Wright's out right now. I think he is a guy who is very much ready for NBA minutes as a backup. He was just way too good for summer league. And, you know, Terrence Ross has looked more comfortable in his role. And then having Carroll healthy, I do think there's potential for this to be a better team, you know. And Dwayne Casey has talked about this, where he said, we might not win as many games, but we could be a better team. That's going to hinge on the defense and whether or not they can adjust to not having Biombo being an anchor out there. But I am reasonably confident in this being a better team. I'm just pretty sure Boston's a much better team as well, so there's some competition there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the East... in that 2-3-4 range, I think is definitely more competitive than it was last year, just because I think Boston's definitely better. I think Toronto's about the, you know, relatively the same. I think I'd feel better about Detroit or Indiana or someone hopping up if a few things were different. If, like, Reggie Jackson's healthy, you know, maybe the Pistons can get up there win record wise. I think the potential's there, but
yeah, sorry, dude.
No, you go ahead. No, you're good.
Watching Detroit last night, they really miss Reggie Jackson, man. Ish Smith was like 3 of 10. The Raptors just dared him to shoot, and he did, and he missed because he's Ish Smith. So
yeah,
I before Jackson got hurt, I thought the Pistons were pretty clearly the fourth best team in the East. After that, like, I get why the Pacers are sexy and attractive, but I also think they're like six guys deep. And
yeah,
I saw, you know, I got a firsthand experience in how bad their bench is, and they didn't really upgrade it to me, aside from Al Jefferson. So yeah, I mean, Miles Turner, if he plays like he did last night, then maybe we were on Wednesday night. I guess it's a different story, but yeah, back to I do think the Raptors and Celtics are pretty clearly 2-3, and I think there's a significant drop off after that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely these tiers in the East where the Cavs are kind of in their own realm, regardless of wins, and where they finish up, and then I think Toronto and Boston are right there, and I think we probably won't see. We may not see them in the playoffs, and if depending on how things shake out, if something goes wrong or someone surges, but I really hope we do, because I think that would be a really good 2-3 series.
If I was to bet on like the playoff series, I think is most likely to happen. It's probably Cavs Warriors number one in the finals, and then like next would probably be the Raptors and Celtics in the second round. I think, barring some crazy injury. Or barring the Cavs just totally mailing it in and losing the one seed, which I don't think is going to happen. I really think that is really setting up, you know, months in advance to be that second round series that, you know, might actually get the Raptors on, you know, off of NBA TV, which would be nice.
Yeah, those NBA TV series are always like not great. And that would be, it would be good quality of basketball wise. Toronto, Boston would definitely be worthy of not having to be stuck where no one's going to.
Yeah.
Not shutting off to NBA TV. And I know it's early in the season, and I know the preseason's not something we really should value all that much because NBA teams don't take it all that seriously. But have you picked up anything new about this group of Raptors since in the preseason or from, you know, just the beginning of the season?
Well, ironically enough, like during the preseason, Jonas Valanciunas looked horrible. I mean, he was slow. It was like a carryover from his pretty bad performance in the Olympics for Lithuania. He just didn't look like he was interested. You know, he was like getting out rebounded by guys, just having guys like jump over and get balls over his back, and it just did not look good at all. But last night, I think, kind of showed a bit of an unlocking of what Valanciunas could be for the Raptors. He took 15 shots, which doesn't happen very often. I think 18 is his career high. Scored 32 points. And a lot of what happens with Valanciunas, or has happened with Valanciunas in the past, is he's been very post-heavy and he's been very predictable when he gets the ball, because he's not a very good passer out of the post. So when he gets the ball in deep post position, you know what he's doing. He's going to back down his guy for a few seconds because he doesn't like to attack very quickly, and then he's either going to score, he's going to get fouled, he's going to turn it over, or he's going to miss. And that was very predictable. It was like clockwork for Valanciunas. And I think last night kind of showed that maybe there's a diversification of his offensive skill set going on. Maybe he hit a couple elbow jumpers. Maybe he incorporates that a little bit more. He was running a bit of like dribble handoffs with DeMar DeRozan. Didn't see that all that often.
Yeah.
He was, he had like six offensive boards, and he's always going to get points on his second chance opportunities like that. But, you know, working him into the pick and roll a little bit more, you know, having Lowry and DeRozan look for him as a roller. He was so effective as a roller last year. He just didn't get the ball that often in those situations. So I think that might be the biggest difference this year. If one game is an indicator, which it's probably not, but if Valanciunas is going to be incorporated more into just the regular run of things, and maybe the usage percentage difference between Lowry, DeRozan, and Valanciunas isn't so stark, I think that's like a real possibility that he becomes sort of a more focal point of the offense. And I think that's a good thing. I think that takes the load off Lowry and DeRozan a little bit more. That's the biggest difference I saw in game one from what the Raptors looked like last season.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think that's something for Cavs fans to watch. And I think Friday, I know it's early in the season, but if you're going to watch one of the games this weekend, I would probably tell you to try to watch the Raptors game. It's probably going to be a higher quality game. There definitely is a little bit of, I think, annoyance between the two teams. I don't want to say there's a rivalry per se, but I don't think I always thought the Raptors last year didn't really enjoy the fact that the Cavs seemed to kind of brush them off a little bit. Like, they want to be respected, and I think they deserve to be respected, but I don't think the Cavs really quite view Toronto as a team that could maybe beat them in the East. I just never really got that vibe from them in any way, and they're obviously their prerogative, but I think in the regular season especially, the game should be, is the Cavs' first road game, and it's also sort of a test of how they're going to start approaching back-to-backs, because for one, I don't know how much LeBron's going to rest, but it's a possibility he will, and it won't be Friday, but if it'd be Saturday, so does he play a lot on Friday? Do they limit his minutes Friday to let him play Saturday because it's still early in the season? The backup point guard situation's still kind of there, but it's just sort of an interesting... I mean, I'll ask you this, just as someone who, it doesn't cover the Cavs, what do you think is the biggest weakness with this Cavs team?
That's interesting. That's a tough one. I do think, Kevin Love in certain matchups, aside from, the most important possessions of the finals, is probably a kind of a guy that you can punish defensively. It's hard to say there are weaknesses on a team that, just won the title and came back from down 3-1 in the finals. Like, that's a really strong team. I guess the depth might be a bit of an issue, losing Dellavedova, Mo Williams retiring, a couple other guys left there too. Am I correct?
The roster is basically sort of the same, but no Deli. And then no Mo Williams, even though he's technically still on the roster, but he's in Alabama.
Yeah, but I mean, if the roster is a little thinner, maybe that makes it harder for the Cavs to like weather those games where they rest their guys. I really don't see many weaknesses with this Cavs team. Like, I know everyone's trying to anoint the Warriors already, but the Cavs can throw out lineups that are very problematic. And, maybe Love is too much of a defensive liability when Kevin Durant is taking the place of Harrison Barnes. And maybe that's just too much for them to overcome. But I really think, LeBron just kind of seals over all weaknesses, does he not? Like, it's unfair how good he is.
Yeah, it really is. Because it gives you a chance when you otherwise would not have a chance.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like, the Cavs aren't winning the finals if LeBron does not do so many of the things that he did in that series. Like, he was just ridiculous for the latter part of that series. But it's... I think you're right. I think the shallowness thing is interesting because they're in a Mon Shumpert injury away from having to play a rookie backup point guard and probably needing to either go get a wing or play Jordan McRae or DeAndre Liggins. That's not great. That's not really an ideal thing for a team that realistically should make the finals again.
Yeah, let me ask you something. Are you, like, how much do you think LeBron is going to rest this year? Do you think it's a year where he's going to sort of take it easy? Or there's kind of two schools of thought, right? It's like, oh, he just won the title. He can take it easy. He knows what waits in the finals with the Super Warriors. Or is it, you know, he just won the finals. Maybe he wants to capitalize on, you know, a bit of a thinned out MVP field with some guys cannibalizing votes from each other on super teams. And maybe he just goes balls to the wall this season to try to win his fifth MVP and just prove that he's still the best, even though those Warriors exist out West.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think he will play around 70 games. I think early in the season he's going to play about every night. But I think once you get deeper into the season, he's going to rest a little bit more, as he should. I think it makes a lot of sense to rest him. But I also think in those 70 games, he's going to play at a high enough level where, to me, he's the favorite to an MVP. Because I think Curry and Durant are going to split the vote. I think Kawhi is probably the next best candidate, but I don't think guys like Harden or Russell Westbrook are going to win enough games to get themselves in consideration. And I think after the finals last year, I think we've tilted, at least my perceptions, we've tilted back towards saying LeBron is like clearly the best guy. And I think that sort of sets him up to win an MVP. And I don't necessarily think he has to play, you know, 75 games or something to win it. I think he can play, you know, 70 games, 71 games, get the rest that he needs, have the stats he's going to have because everyone's just going to realize he's good. The Cavs are going to win 58 games. And he's still going to be that conversation. And I think he should rest. I don't think there's a big incentive for the Cavs to really push him and play him, let's say, 80 games to win the one seed. Because it's simplifying it a little bit, but I think if they were like the four seed, I would still pick them to make the finals. Like, I don't really care where they end up in the Eastern Conference standings. Like, I just think they're going to be that good when it matters.
Yeah, it's sort of an interesting, like, similar scenario in Toronto because Kyle Lowry last year, I think, was like the sixth highest minutes total in the NBA. You know, and he kind of got that, I mean, it was sort of a fluky elbow injury, but it led into the playoffs and it affected his performance in the first couple rounds for sure. And I think the sentiment among a lot of Raptors fans is they want to see Lowry rest more this year. They want to see the minutes per game come down. And it's made easier by the fact that the Raptors have, I mean, you know, DeLon Wright, once he's back, once he comes back, there's like four point guards on the roster that could potentially help ease the load there. I think it's kind of similar. It's weird being a Raptors fan and having, you know, this season, this is the first time where a season hasn't felt like it's, you know, go and win every game and just try to do as well as you can. You know, the Raptors are good enough, as we've talked about, there's that sort of gap between the 2 and 3 teams and the rest of the East. I think the Raptors are good enough where they can sort of take the foot off the gas a little bit this year, which is weird to say because this team has been a disaster for so long that it's just never been the reality. But, you know, this is kind of a year where I think a lot of people are okay if the Raptors, you know, maybe they don't win, maybe they win like 50 games and they drop 6 wins in their total from last year. Right. But if it's in the name of health come the playoffs, I think a lot of Raptors fans are going to be very okay with that.
Yeah. So before we really go, because this is so early in the season,
I just want to get,
where do you think the Raptors finish and how far do you think they go this season? Just kind of generally.
So I think they're going to come third in the East. I think not having Sullinger early and just sort of trying to work out the big rotation is probably going to cost them a few wins. And like I said, I think they're probably going to try to scale back Lowry and DeRozan's workloads a little bit. And Damari Carroll as well. That's another one that, you know, he's probably going to rest on a lot of back-to-backs just because they want to keep him fresh and the knee is still a thing to worry about. So I think, yeah, they probably give back some wins. I think they finish with like 51, 52 wins, probably in the third seed. And then if I had to pick today, I mean, I think I had to pick a couple days ago for a different podcast, and I think I picked Boston to win in the second round, and the Raptors would lose in the second round. I think I'd probably just stick with that for now, being the general, you know, pessimist that Raptors fans tend to be. But it's so hard to make a pick. I want to wait to see how the Raptors and Celtics match up in the regular season before actually making a concrete choice. If I had to flip a coin right now, I'd probably say Boston, just because they have a full complement of guys, except for Marcus Smart, who will be back soon. And their defense is going to be excellent, and I'm not sure where the Raptors' defense is going to be at. I think it'll still be a very good offense, but there's an uncertainty there that I don't think exists with Boston, especially in the regular season. But yeah, like I said, Kyle Lowry is damn good, and he could easily carry the Raptors to a playoff series win. I think either way, that series goes seven. And if I had to pick today, well, I guess we'll go Boston and be pleasantly surprised if it doesn't happen that way.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty reasonable take. I think I'm in the same boat as you. I do want to see them play, but I do think that it's ultimately Toronto might lose to Boston. But I still think it'd be a great series. I think it maybe goes seven games. But Sean, thanks for coming on. If people want to follow you on Twitter now and read your work or listen to everything besides Locked On the Raptors, where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter at Woodley Sean. I also have a Facebook page that is made where I kind of post all my stuff. It's just search at Sean Woodley Raptors on there, and all my work will come up. In addition to doing Locked On Raptors, I write for RaptorsHQ.com, and I host our podcast there. It's the weekly show called The Headquarters. It's different than the Locked On style of show. I think we do some newsy stuff, but we get pretty silly with it by the end of the show. Yeah. We do this whole segment where we go back and reminisce about old Raptors, and it's a good time. So yeah, check that out if you're interested in more Raptors talk. And yeah, on Twitter with bad puns and terrible jokes and all that fun stuff. But thanks for having me on, man.
Of course, happy to have Sean on. So now, listeners, we're going to take a quick break, and Philip Rossman Reich from Orlando Magic Daily and Locked On Magic is going to join the show to preview Cavs Magic.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Hey, Philip, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So this is another Locked On Network crossover. It's Locked On Cavs and Locked On Magic. These two teams are obviously playing each other over the weekend, and so we're going to do a preview of that game. There are two teams, I think it'd be fair to say, Philip, that they're in different spectrums of the Eastern Conference. The Cavs are atop the East. The Magic are a team that I think if everything goes right, they may be in the playoff hunt. But, it's an early season matchup, and I think both teams are pretty interesting in their own right.
I would certainly think so. I mean, the Magic obviously will probably get into this, had a summer of sorts, and the Cavs also had a celebratory summer. And I think both teams are trying to do more. Of course, with Cleveland, it's trying to repeat a championship, and for the Magic, it's just to get the pleasure of being swept by the Cavs in the first round of the playoffs.
that's a fun way of looking at it. But
someone's got to do it. Someone's got to take that hit.
Yeah, personally, the most fun one would be the Wizards, because we haven't seen Cavs Wizards in a while, and I'm always down for rehashing those old rivalries.
Can Gilbert Arenas suit up for that series, please?
Yeah, let's get Gilbert back. I mean, he apparently needs money, from what I've read lately. He's like broke or something like that. He had to take his kids out of private school or something. So maybe he needs that 10-day backup John Wall for like $200,000, and we'll call it a day for Gilbert Arenas. But former Orlando Magic great Gilbert Arenas with
former Orlando Magic great.
Yeah, with
best flanker on the team.
Yeah, with great and severe air quotes. But we look at the Magic and we look at the Cavs, and they're, as I said, they're teams that they do different things. They're in different places. Philip, just because we haven't previewed the Magic on my show, they had a crazy offseason. I mean, just all the guys they added. You get Frank Vogel, who I love. You trade Victor Oladipo, and you get Serge Ibaka back. What do you make of how they change over the summer? And are they better off than they were last year?
I think the Magic had this kind of clear goal in mind when they made all these moves for the summer. It was all kind of working toward this goal. And so when people tell me, oh, I'm confused by what the Magic did, this is the context I put it in. The Magic, ever since trading Dwight Howard, have missed the playoffs. It's been 4 years since they were last in the playoffs. And it actually, believe it or not, ties for the longest playoff drought in the Magic's 27-year franchise history. So this is not a team that's used to being you know, less than mediocre like this for a very, very long time. And so the Magic, I think, desperate probably isn't the right word, but they feel this urgency to become better. And so they looked at the landscape of the NBA, and they looked at really what they've always said they wanted to be, and that's a versatile defensive athletic team. And they said the best bet for us to get into the playoffs is to just be really, really good at defense. I mean, last year, 10 of the top 11 teams in terms of defensive rating made the playoffs. The one that didn't is Utah Jazz, who missed by a game because Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert and seemingly half the team were injured toward the end of the season. So the Magic just made this huge bet that if we load up on defense, if we bring in a guy like Serge Ibaka, you know, trading away some assets, but bring in a veteran like Serge Ibaka, get a little bit more experience too, go out and sign Bismack Biyombo, that we can get punch our ticket to the Eastern Conference playoffs. And then as far as developing for the future, we'll cross that road once we accomplish this short-term goal. That's kind of the context that I see the moves the Magic made. Whether they accomplished that or not, I think is certainly up for a very legitimate and very real debate.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a good way to look at it. I think that's a more clear view than I think that what we have gotten from some of how we've looked at this team, like in a broader analysis sense. Because I think a lot of people, myself included, have just been sort of confused because it doesn't seem to all sort of work together in an interesting way. But I like some of it, to be honest with you. I love Frank Vogel. I thought he was a very underrated coach that, you know, did a lot of really good things with those Pacers teams that he had, even with the Paul George injury and whatnot. And, you know, I do like the Ibaka trade. I think Oladipo and Payton weren't exactly a great pairing, and I think if you he's easily the more tradable one. Some of it is interesting, and I love Aaron Gordon. I love Evan Fournier, no Google himself. So I like some of what's there, and I'm intrigued to kind of see. I'm going to be at the game in Cleveland on Saturday covering it. I'm intrigued to see them up and close in person.
Yeah, they're still kind of this interesting mix of young guys and and obviously they've added some veterans, and it's just not clear quite yet how it all comes together because that offensive piece isn't quite there. And obviously people look at that because that's kind of where the highlights are. And, you know, I think there are still questions of fit, you know, much like that Payton Oladipo question was do those two fit together because neither of them can shoot a jumper. The questions now, can you move Aaron Gordon to the three and have him develop into what he can develop into or what he's supposed to be? You know, can you run a team with these three centers with, you know, with maybe even Bismack Biyombo pushing Nikola Vucevic for minutes again? All these questions are running through there. And at the end of the day, you know, this is still just a team that needs to develop. I mean, they need Aaron Gordon to turn into something. They need Elfrid Payton to turn into something. And they don't really have that galvanizing star. So, you know, when I look at why people are questioning the Magic, a lot of it is because there's just so much unknown to how this thing is going to play out and how these critical players are going to develop in these roles that they're playing.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. I think the roles thing to me is what I worry about. Because, you know, you sign Jeff Green, who obviously has his set of issues, but I you know, it takes away Aaron Gordon at the four with the other front court guys they have, that's an issue. Vucevic doesn't have an exactly ideal fit in this team. You have Biyombo and Ibaka, which seems sort of redundant. You know, there's just those kind of issues there. Fournier has to play such a big role. You know, is Mario Hezonja going to play? Those are some interesting questions that you have about the roles. And I think that's a smart way of looking at, I think, the sort of confusion there. It's more about role more than what do these guys actually, like, do. It's just, like, how do you put them in the right situations where they actually will have something to do that fits what they're actually good at.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at a team, you know, and I like when I do, you know, believe it or not, I do get people who come to me on Twitter and social media and say, you know, how is this Magic team going to beat the Cavs? And I'm like, we're not even in the same league. I mean, you look at Cleveland, and you know, a team like Cleveland, who's at the very, very top of the league, everyone knows exactly what they're supposed to do and what they're going to do. And that's what makes them so good. The roles are very clearly defined. They have some ability to be flexible within them, but at the end of the day, everyone kind of falls into place. And, you know, when I look at what Cleveland did coming off a championship, how does that team evolve? How does that team get to the next step, especially keeping so many of the same guys when, you know, their chief competition in Golden State, you know, out West, did what they did.
It's interesting. I think, one, you have to bet on some internal improvement. I think a full year of healthy Kyrie Irving the regular season certainly helps. I think you hope Iman Shumpert really is better this year after not being good at all last year and him having his own injury issues. And I think the big one really would be Kevin Love. I mean, I think everyone would kind of understand that it hasn't exactly been a seamless process with Love and the Cavs. It has been sort of up and down, and it has been sort of dramatic, and that has just been a thing. But when you look at where they are now, he mentally, ever since they won the title, he has seemed more relaxed. He has seemed more like a guy who's enjoying being here. I think Tyronn Lue has been a big help with him because Lue was the one who really told him to be aggressive. LeBron said it, yes, but Lue connected with Love and was like, you need to call for the ball. You need to go down on the post and get it. It's early in the season still, but we're seeing Kevin Love with bench units where he is kind of playing a Minnesota-esque role in those lineups. They're not for, 10 minutes like it maybe be when he's with the Wolves and averaging 25 and 12, but he's getting to do some of those things in an organic way we haven't seen before. And that's, I think, when we can prove it diversifies the offense and makes things sort of flow easier. I mean, when I was at the season opener and I was watching them play, it was the first time I had felt like I had watched the Cavs, and then they were actually functioning in a way that they weren't really trying to do one thing or hitting things over the head with a hammer. They were just sort of doing these little things that were very simple, but it was all just coming so smooth. And yeah, the Knicks aren't the best team in the world, but they weren't really having to force all these things on top of what they're doing. It all just sort of worked. And I think with the growth, I think if you can keep that style of play for the year with LeBron, even taking a step back a little bit and saving yourself for the playoffs, I think that's a way you can improve and hit that next level. And I also just think if there's any team and any specific star player that is going to have a chance of beating those Warriors and is going to be motivated and just sucked into the idea of beating those Warriors, it's LeBron James.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Tuesday's game as well, and it just felt like it felt very natural and everything seemed to flow really well for them. It just, I guess my question, my next thought or question would be, did winning a championship, getting that monkey off their back, kind of relax everyone to say, oh, we can do this?
Yeah, I don't even believe that they've really addressed that or said that directly, but I just, you listen to them talk, you listen to the body language, I think so. I think, to use Love as an example, last year there was a game where they're playing the Kings, and I think it was in Sacramento, where he hadn't played that well. It was a closer game than it should have been because the Cavs were definitely much better than the Kings. And he hit this three in the corner. I think it was one of the only two or three threes he hit in that game. And it was a big three. It gave them some momentum going into a timeout. And as you're coming off the court, you see J.R. Smith and Kyrie Irving celebrating that three. They're doing the air guitars. They are just really enjoying themselves. And Kevin Love is walking up the court and isn't smiling, doesn't join in the celebration, and just looks really, really miserable. He kind of didn't look happy in the finals all the time. And then the moment they won, you saw this change where they were all very relaxed. Love shows up to the parade with smoking a cigar, got the two wrestling championship belts on his shoulders. And I think you just see them now. I think they know they accomplished what they set out to do. No one's really expecting them to do it again. They got through a lot in those last two years, and I think they feel freed by what happened. I think they're still driven to win. I think LeBron is still feels slighted by people. I still think he wants to certainly win again, and I think he certainly wants people to take him seriously because he's LeBron. I think they do think they're going to win the title again, but I think that first one took so much pressure off, and I think it opened up the possibility for some interesting scenarios.
I think, I could certainly tell that, and it's just one, in my one game conclusion from Tuesday, it must be so nice to be playing for championships. I miss that. it's been too long.
Yeah, it's certainly covering a team that has those expectations. It certainly makes the regular season a different animal to cover, because I don't feel like I have that many these burning questions about them this regular season. Like, are they going to make a trade? Is it they're going to, incorporate Love more? Is LeBron going to rest? Do they have a backup point guard? Like, these aren't the same type of questions that I feel like a team like Orlando is answering. It's like, okay, is Mario Hezonja going to take a step up? Is Aaron Gordon developing at the rate we want him to? Those are, like, more layered, complex questions that I think are kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah, and I like. I mean, I remember when I was covering, when I was at least writing about the 2010 Magic team that lost to the Celtics in the conference finals. It was like they'd win games, and I'd be miserable that they won because they didn't win it doing the things they needed to do. They were just, you know, you're so, you know, teams like that are so good that they don't need to play perfect every night to win. Whereas, like, I mean, I don't know how much you want to get into Wednesday's Magic game, but Wednesday the Magic did not do any of the things they needed to do and look like a lottery team. But at the same time, like, there were moments in that game where, like, this team, if they can play like that longer, and I know they can because I've seen it in the preseason a little bit, if they can play at a higher level longer with a more focused energy, they can really compete with everyone, but you just can't rely on them to do it every single time. And that's, I think, to me, like, when I think of what the difference is between great teams and kind of the mediocre teams, it's consistency and putting the right player in the right role. Like, I say this all the time, like, about Evan Fournier. Evan Fournier on the Cavs is probably a really nice third, fourth option, and he can be really successful. But asking him to be your team's top scorer every night, you're probably not going to win a lot of games doing that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I think, you know, I look at this Magic team, and I think, you know, it's early in the season. They're still kind of figuring some things out, but I think there's the potential there for them to do some stuff with the Cavs that I think is interesting. You know, like, for one, you know, I think one of the things the Cavs have done early in the season, they did this a lot in the finals, is they're running these Kyrie Irving LeBron James pick and rolls. So you have Kyrie and LeBron, one of them setting a screen for the other one, and it creates these mismatches. I'm not going to say, like, that Aaron Gordon and Elfrid Payton can really stop LeBron and Kyrie, but, like, I think, like, Gordon, if he's switched on to Kyrie, I think he's agile enough to defend Kyrie. And I think, like, you know, the Magic aren't perfect, and I don't think Wednesday's game, you know, really made me think, okay, this team, like, has stuff figured out, or, like, and it's so early because you just don't know. But I think there's some little things there, and I was at least, and they lost to the Heat, but, like, at least there's some stuff there to me that was intriguing enough where I don't want to completely just, like, ignore them. Like, I think in my head I already, there's certainly teams that I'm like, do I really need to watch them? It's like, I just don't know. And I feel like Orlando, at least there's enough there where I am going to want to watch some of that.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing that the Magic are kind of banking on right now. And I think a big reason why Magic fans are really excited and optimistic about this team. I mean, you know, we all get, you know, as everyone does, I think that we get yelled at when we, you know, by our followers when we kind of are trying to be very level-headed with our teams. But, you know, this is what I said coming out of the Serge Ibaka deal in the summer. When the Magic traded Victor Oladipo for Serge Ibaka, it hurt a lot of fans because Victor was essentially the face of the franchise. He was the highest draft pick that they had accumulated in this rebuild and all that. And I said, you know, they traded Victor Oladipo and got back a player with an elite skill. Whether we want to admit it or not, Serge Ibaka has an elite skill, and that's something the Magic needed more of. They need guys who can do things at an elite level. You know, certainly Ibaka's stats have fallen off, and it seems like his defense is falling off. And so there's, you know, I think a major question or a major hope that by giving him a larger role in the offense or relying on him more, you know, taking away the Durant-Westbrook dynamic, that Ibaka can either return to those numbers and be focused or reach a level that he hasn't reached before. And that's obviously a huge risk to take too, but that's the kind of risk that the Magic needed to take to bring in someone that can do something that very few people in this league can do.
Yeah, I think that's certainly, like, fair. I think you look at like Evan Fournier, for example. I think you see a guy who is very skilled. They got, like, he's a good player who's going to really, really work, I think, wherever he plays. Cause I think he does things that just make sense. Like, he just does things as a shooter, as a ball handler, as a smart defender that just makes sense in this NBA.
He fills gaps. That's how I describe it. Like, he probably don't want him, like, taking guys one-on-one off the dribble. But you send him the ball on a ball reversal, and while the defense is rotating to him, he's going to attack it and make the right play. Whether it's, you know, attacking it and pulling up for a mid range jumper, or getting all the way to the rim, or attacking and passing it to the next guy. Yeah, he's rarely going to make a mistake.
What do you think is the thing the Magic do? What do you think they do that? What is their best? how do I phrase this? I guess I can't even talk. What are they best at?
Right now, that's very, very hard to say. Because they like a lot of people, and I think even the Magic said this at one point, think the preseason is too long. I think the Magic needed more preseason. I don't feel like they're completely ready for real games yet. And Wednesday kind of proved me right on some respects. They just haven't really had the time to come together. I think ultimately, ideally, what they're best at is defense. I mean, we've talked about Frank Vogel and the impact that he can have. You know, he's coached a top 10 defense all, you know, pretty much all 5 years that he's coached as a head coach in the NBA. That's his calling card. And you bring in Serge Ibaka, you bring in Bismack Biyombo, you have Aaron Gordon. That should mean you have a really, really good defense. And what I think the Magic hope will happen is that they'll, like I said before, they'll be a top 10 defense, and that's their ticket into the playoffs. That, you know, their offense will figure things out. But right now they need their defense to be their calling card. And I think what's been most concerning through the preseason is they just don't look like they're on the same page yet. I mean, it's, you know, I'm sure like the thing that concerns me Saturday against the Cavs, for instance, is Cleveland has so much continuity, and not only are they a really, really good team, but they have so much continuity. They look like they're playing at a pretty high level already, and the Magic just aren't there yet. I mean, they're still kind of a step off of where they need to be on both ends of the floor, really. And that's something that's going to take some time to develop. And the hope that the Magic say is that it doesn't take too long, or that they can win while they're doing it, because, you know, right now their defense goes through stages, and it was true in the preseason, just like it was true on Wednesday. It goes through stages where they don't make the right switch when they're supposed to, or a guy gets by someone and the help isn't quite there yet, or the helper isn't quite there yet. And so they're still learning these schemes and still coming together. So it's hard to tell what they're supposed to be right now, other than what we think they're supposed to be.
When they get everybody back, because Biyombo obviously missed the start of the year with the suspension. What do you think is the ideal rotation for this team? And who are some of the guys that I think, if you're going to say, okay, Saturday, Cavs fans, you're going to watch the Magic, who are like three guys Cavs fans really should be paying attention to?
I mean, they'll probably run – it's looking like they're going to run a 9-man rotation. You know, I think the Magic really missed Bismack Biyombo on Wednesday. During the preseason, he was just this, you know, ball of energy. He just plays with so much exuberance, and he comes onto the floor and just immediately kind of mixes things up. And the Magic really missed that. I mean, a lot of these guys are still kind of like quiet, passive guys. Personality-wise, they're just kind of more reserved. And Biyombo's just, you know, much more exuberant. I mean, Victor Oladipo was much the same way, but, you know, maybe not as impactful with his rim protection. And the Magic certainly could have used some of his rim protection, seeing as they gave up 70 points in the paint to the Heat on Wednesday. The next guy, I think Aaron Gordon, you know, everyone knows about his dunking and his athleticism and all that. He has really showed signs that he's expanded his game a little bit more. Like he had a couple threes on Wednesday. He's becoming a little bit more of a threat off the dribble. They're not quite giving him the ball to run pick and rolls quite yet. But Gordon, especially in transition, is a really, really scary prospect. And it looks like he's grown his game this summer. And he's had to deal with a sprained ankle at the beginning of training camp, and still looks like he's starting to round back into shape from that. But he's someone that you could watch and see some growth. And honestly, the last guy I would say is you know, Nikola Vucevic. I mean, I think a lot of people think they know what they have in Nikola Vucevic, where he's just kind of a double-double guy, but you're not going to rely on him a lot for defense. His defense this entire season so far has really impressed me. He's done better getting into position and stopping dribble penetration and trying to track back. He's not the rim protector that you maybe want in an elite defense, but he's been playing at a pretty high level, and if he can keep that offense up, you know, his defense isn't going to be as big of a concern as we might have thought, or as it was in previous seasons.
Yeah, I think those are the guys I would have singled out to be quite honest. I like a lot of the guys in this roster. I'm not super high on Peyton, but I do like kind of like everyone you mentioned there. I think there are really guys that. On the Magic that are good players that fit in this NBA that are really, really headed to some really interesting places.
Yeah, and it feels like this Magic roster. And I think it was this way, you know, even before the summer, even before all the deals that they made. It feels like this Magic roster has a lot of players that you're like, I really like this guy. He's a good player. He's got to fit somewhere in the NBA, but they just don't fit together well. That's just kind of the lot that, you know, the Magic haven't been able to figure out how to team build quite yet, with the group that they've had to draft and they've had to acquire through this rebuild. I guess from my perspective, for Magic fans watching the game on Saturday, aside from the guys we already know, like, what's different, you know, about this Cavs team that's maybe changed since June that Magic fans should be looking out for?
So I think the things that are different, for one, the backup point guard situation is sort of interesting because Dele's gone. So now the Iman Shumpert's the backup point guard, which has its own set of issues.
But, is he gonna be healthy by Saturday?
He should play Friday. Okay. Time we recorded this, you know, it's if you're listening to this on Saturday, we're recording this a little bit on Thursday, so there's a chance that, you know, something could have changed by then, so you'll have to just, you know, read through the sword and find out. But he should be cleared. You know, it was weird because when I watched him smack his head on Porzingis, I was like, yeah, he's probably not going to play until next week. but it looks like he's going to play. Kay Feller's going to play too. And there's sort of a position battle going on there between those guys, kind of. I think they're leaning Shumpert. Mike Dunleavy offers them something different off the bench as a shooter that I think is really useful. And I think sort of the big thing that we hit on before, I think they're just playing more fluid. They just are more relaxed, and I think it's a lot of the same faces, like kind of like we talked about, but they just seem more fluid, they seem more relaxed. It's not going to be – it doesn't seem like there's a chance of a Cavs night where they might just be off and kind of aloof and just have one of those like really bad games that they were prone to. That doesn't seem as possible to me right now. The other thing I would say is Saturday is the first test in – what we're really going to see out of LeBron in terms of rest this year. I don't expect him to rest that early, but it's the second half of a back-to-back. They'll have been traveling back from Toronto. I think later in the year he might rest this game, and if they're going to really, really rest him all year, third game of the season would be like that. That's just the type of game where he might do it. I think it's too early to really go that route, but it's certainly something that I think he may not play as many minutes, and you're just going to see a Cavs team, I think, that is sort of... They're playing. They're gonna be really good, but I don't think they're gonna maybe push as hard or seem as uptight as they might have last year.
Yeah, and of course, if Saturday's game goes like most of the games against the Cavs last year between the Magic and the Cavs and the preseason game, I don't think LeBron will have to play very much anyway. especially with the, I mean, like I know my concern is this Magic defense is not together quite yet, and Cleveland can go flying death machine on you if you're not careful. And so, if you're a team like the Magic, to beat a team like the Cavs, you got to be pretty close to perfect, even in the regular season, I think.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable. I'll ask you this, and this is kind of the one thing, and we touched on this a little bit. How would you go about like trying to defend the Cavs? Like, what would your strategy sort of be? And would you try anything funky? Like, and who do you have defending LeBron?
Well, I'd put Aaron Gordon on LeBron. I think that's your best bet. The big thing if I'm the Magic is you got to get back. You can't let them get out in transition. You got to make them execute in the half court. And the bet there being they're less likely to beat you in the half court than in transition. And that means you got to be really disciplined with your shot selection. You've got to selectively go after the offensive glass, and you've got to be really talking. You got to be talking a lot to slow down the break and make sure someone's on the ball. Someone's got your help. You know, you got to really be on the ball with what you're doing. And so I think stopping transition points is absolutely critical to slowing down the Cavs. I think the best way to kind of beat them is probably to limit possessions as much as you can. I know Frank Vogel has said he wants this team to run, and I don't know if that necessarily means having more possessions or picking up the pace. But I do think that means you run when you can, but if you can't, you run through your stuff. You be very careful. You don't be not aggressive, like you don't be conservative with your shot selection, but you kind of use your offense to keep the ball away from the Cavs as much as you can. The Magic should be a decent offensive rebounding team with the centers that they have. So, you know, you rely on them to get you possessions. And, you know, unless there's a clear putback, you send it back out and reset the 24-second shot clock and try and just slow them down and kind of bog them down in an ugly game that way and take your chances at the end.
Yeah, do you think it helps, though, too, that, like, in terms of what there could be in a year or two, that Vogel's a guy who did coach against LeBron before? Like, do you think that plays a factor in all what he'll do?
I think it will. I mean, I think Vogel does have a good understanding of what kind of defenses can be successful in the NBA at a high level. I mean, you look at the teams that he's turned into kind of defensive juggernauts. They're actually quite different. I mean, you had Roy Hibbert, who mastered verticality at first, and then when he kind of slowed off, you know, he went to Jan Mahinmi and turned Jan Mahinmi and Jordan Hill and even a guard heavy defensive rotation into a pretty strong defensive team. And so, you know, I think there's this narrative that perhaps Vogel isn't flexible, that he, you know, wants things run a certain way or he has a system. But I don't think that's true. I think he's very, very versatile. He has some very baseline tenets and principles that he wants coached that he can work around with his roster to reach that goal that he wants or have that goal get achieved. And so I think, you know, he did get to help kind of handpick this Magic team a little bit, or at least influence how this team gets formed this season, at least. I think he's capable of, you know, adjusting his defense, and I think his defensive principles are pretty time worn and can fit any group that he has.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think that's the thing I like most about this Magic, and that makes me have the most faith in them, is that Frank Vogel is such a good coach, is such a guy who had a lot of success, can coach a bunch of styles, and I'm a fan of what he did in Orlando. I'm a fan of what he can do with this Cavs team, so. I'm in on sort of those things. I'm buying them, maybe not as like a good team, but as a team I think will be kind of pretty interesting. So before we kind of wrap this up, let's just go say each of us will give three keys to the game for the teams that we cover. So you, the Magic, me, the Cavs. Philip, you just give me the three things. If the Magic are going to win this game, what do they have to do?
They gotta play really good defense. They need to be solid on the defensive end, and you know, that's something that's been a continuing process throughout the season. You know, they need to look like the team that we all kind of imagine that they'll be. The next thing they gotta do is, I mean, it sounds like they gotta turn those stops into transition points. You know, I kind of said that the Magic have to run selectively against the Cavs, but they've gotta be able to get across the timeline quickly and try and catch Cleveland before their defense gets set. It doesn't necessarily mean they're scoring in transition or getting fast break points, but, you know, if they can get a matchup where, you know, Kyrie Irving is on Serge Ibaka's back, you know, because of cross matches, or, you know, even like a Channing Frye is on Nikola Vucevic's back, you know, something like that, they've got to take advantage of those matchups when they come, and they've got to kind of beat the Cavs defense down the floor so that they can create those mismatches. And the next thing they got to do is they've got to make three pointers. I mean, I think a lot of the concern with this Magic team is there's not enough shooting. And so I think they're probably a better shooting team than people give them credit for, but that's maybe based on internal improvement, but they've got to be able to make three pointers and keep defenses honest to keep that lane open. And if they can make some threes early, especially, that can hopefully open some things up for Elfrid Payton to squeeze his way into the paint or to set up post-ups for Vucevic or even Ibaka.
Yeah, I think those are all pretty accurate. I think Aaron Gordon is like probably the most important player in this game for Orlando. Like, I think just if he can even make a marginal impact on LeBron and do some things in offense, that would mean a lot. So my three keys to the game, I think for one, I think the Cavs will have, the first thing is just an effort thing. It's like if they're going to win this game, they're going to have to come in and play with a focus and a level of effort that, you know, we don't always see, and if they don't take the game seriously, that'll matter. Number two, I think the backup point guard situation is something that just watch every game until it is sort of settled. If you want to get LeBron and Kyrie rest in the regular season, you don't want to have to make the playoff move of staggering their minutes all the time. I think you really need to have comfort in Iman Shumpert and or Kay Felder in playing the point in those minutes and them having success in those minutes. So I think that's certainly something to watch. And then I think the last thing is I think they're gonna they're really gonna have to rebound the ball well against this team. Orlando has a big front court, has guys that are good rebounders. Gordon's a pretty good rebounder, if I'm not mistaken, from his from his position. And I think a Vogel team that rebounds well is gonna be can be tricky to beat. I'm gonna think it's gonna be big games from Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson on the boards would go a long way to making this the kind of game I think a lot of people expect the Cavs to have against this team, because everything else will sort of work on how much they're able to rebound the ball, control the pace of the game.
Yeah, I think all those are pretty accurate. You know, I do think the benches could play a big role, because Orlando does have some scoring punch off their bench. They'll bring in Bismack Biyombo with that second unit. He'll play a little bit with the first unit in the first quarter, but he'll largely be playing with that second unit. And, you know, the Magic throughout the I mean, it's just preseason, but the Magic did change the momentum and feeling of some games with their second unit. And so I think that's actually going to be a really key part of this game, is that beginning of the second quarter, beginning of the fourth quarter, how long does it take for the Magic to force Cleveland to put their stars back in?
Yeah, I think that's pretty good too. I think I think you actually just hit on something I think that's really important, is how do teams make the Cavs put their stars back in? Can they overwhelm the bench units? Can they overwhelm the Kevin Love anchored bench units? How long can they force them to how long does it take them to force Kyrie and LeBron to come back in the game and make them work for wins? I think that's something to watch all year. I think that's a really, really astute point. So, Phil, this has been really fun. I'm looking forward to this game. It should be an interesting one. I know it'll be cool to see in person. You'll see it on TV, but it's been fun. We'll definitely have to do another one of these when our teams cross path again.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to the game as well. Hopefully it won't be as painful as the other Ohio team that one of my teams will be facing earlier in the day. So
wait, what's the other matchup?
I am a proud Northwestern alum, and so the Wildcats will be taking on the Ohio State Buckeyes earlier in the day. So I'll be in my Northwestern depression bubble as I watch the Magic play the Cavs.
As a Bobcat, I'm hoping that the Buckeyes lose to your Wildcats. I have a friend that I interned with actually went to Northwestern, so I hope for her sake and yours that they win. And there's also an Athens High School alum who went to who plays at Northwestern, Trey Williams. I think he's a cornerback.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Unfortunately, he's out for the game.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know. That's how much I.
Because we need cornerbacks, and all of them are injured.
Yeah, that'll college football. But so best luck to Northwestern, and best luck to the Magic as well. It should be an interesting game on Saturday. So for myself, for Philip, for Locked On Magic, for Locked On Cavs, it's been another Locked On crossover. And for my listeners, and I think for Philip as well, we'll talk to you again after the game is probably on Monday.
Yep, I'll see you all then.
Yep, talk to you guys soon.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.